out there over pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, the Catholic Church, and interfaith relations. First of all, Happy New Year to all listeners. I hope you enjoyed the last broadcasts, which were snippets of a variety of interviews from 2021. If you don't have a printout copy of your calendar for 2022 yet, I recommend you check out the website of the Religious Diversity Center at www.rdc.org.nz. This year's calendar features different religions and faiths and their connection to the theme of water. The first month in this calendar is dedicated to a Hindu celebration. So for this first new program in 2022, I have invited Ram Lingam to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Ram, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Good everyone and namaste to everyone. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and Happy New Year, Ram.
Yeah, sure.
Ram Lingam is originally from Mumbai, India, and has been in Aotearoa, New Zealand for more than 25 years. He serves as a trustee for Chinmaya Mission New Zealand, is a mindfulness coach, and he's the Hindu representative on the Auckland Interfaith Council. Ram, I have mentioned the Hindu celebration that is featured with a picture in the calendar of the Religious Diversity Center. It is called Magha Snan. The picture features young boys on whose heads water is poured. What is the celebration about?
Now, as you know, water is a sacred element of almost all religions, right?
Yes.
Water is used in many rituals in every religion. So in India as well, water is very important. It's one of the elements, as we know. And all the elements are deified, deified, and there's a high level of reverence to water as such. But particularly with reference to Magha Snan, it is actually the month. So as I mentioned, water in Hindu way of life is or the Sanatan Dharma is a very water is has a very sacred space. Place because it is believed to be having purifying and cleansing powers and properties. So almost all the rivers in India are sacred. I don't think there's any river that is not sacred, actually. So it's a land of sacred rivers. And, you would have heard about Kashi, Banaras, and all those famous popular pilgrimages where the river flows, the Ganga flows in the city of Banaras, by the city of Banaras. So that way, the river, the water is very sacred, and particularly when it comes to the Magha Snan. So it is actually a sacred bathing ritual using water. And in the Gregorian calendar, it is normally in the month of Jan or Feb.
So it's in January or February. Jan to Feb.
Mm-hmm. So the ritual bathing ceremony commences on the full moon of what we call as the Paush month, and comes at the end of the to an end on the day of the Mahashivratri in March. Sometimes so lunar calendar based, and particularly in Prayagraj, north of India, where there is a confluence of three rivers, the observance of this is a holy dip in that. In the confluence of the three rivers is supposed to be even more special. So people actually go to Prayag, in north of India, and thousands of devotees actually gather to perform this bathing ritual or ceremony. And it is believed that, a person who takes a bath during this month, and particularly in holy rivers and holy spots, his mind gets purified and becomes eligible for moksha or liberation while living.
Moksha is liberation?
Moksha is liberation while living. It's enlightenment. That simply means enlightenment. Yeah, so it's all about, all rituals, all ceremonies, holy dips, pilgrimages, etc. Everything is kind of part of the religion to purify the mind. So with a clear mind and a clear intellect, one is able to understand the subtleties of the world and the creator of the world. Yeah.
So water has the cleaning and it's connected to the mind and to purify. And you mentioned the rivers. What about the oceans? Is that connected or is it mainly the rivers that are sacred?
Everything is sacred for a Hindu that way. But particularly in India, you know, we kind of, the river Ganga is very sacred for us. You know, so we have pilgrimages all from the very mouth of the Ganga to the very end, where it reaches the ocean. So there are full of, the whole flow of the river has got lots of sacred places throughout. There's, you know, even when we kind of, in New Zealand or when we are overseas, we invoke all the great rivers of India, because and we assign there's a goddess associated with the the river as well. Like Ganga has got Mother Ganga, so we've got about 8 rivers that we normally invoke. There is a very important shloka. You normally see this chanting done in almost every Hindu ceremony. So, and you'll always see a small kind of a copper pot, and you'll find a water inside. The mango leaves are on the rim, and there's a coconut on the top. So this water is always is a tap water from here. It's basically Waikato water from Waikato, or the river or the Lake Taupo water that comes to Auckland, perhaps, or from the catchment area. But we say that may this water be purified, and so we chant this shloka when we say that, you know, Gange cha Yamune cha Godavari Saraswati Narmada Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sannidhau Kuru. So I just chanted this particular verse. Every priest, everybody knows this pretty much. So it says Ganga, Gange cha Yamuna. Yamuna is the second river. Then it says cha Godavari, third river. Saraswati is the fourth river. Then it says Narmade Sindhu Kaveri. So Narmada Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sannidhau Kuru.
These are all names of rivers.
Yeah, so Ganga, Yamuna, Godavari, Saraswati, Narmada, Sindhu, Kaveri. 7 rivers. It's just straight. And then we say, may this, all the holy rivers be present in this water.
Ah, okay, yeah. And on this photo that is there, you have these boys on which water is poured. Is that a celebration only for boys?
No, it's for everybody as such.
Yeah, so they would sit at a water and they would be receiving the water to purify. Is that correct?
Yeah, during that particular month. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a month-long Hindu festival. Yeah, and there's lots of, get-togethers happening. We call it Mela. You know how we call the Diwali Mela?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we call the Magha Mela.
Lots of celebrations.
Yeah.
And the other... the other celebrations that are in the calendar, so the picture features the celebration that is connected to water, because the theme that runs through the calendar is the theme of water. And then there are 2 other celebrations mentioned on the 14th of January, which is Makar Sankranti, yes. And 18th of January, Thai Pusam. Can you say a couple of things about these 2 celebrations?
Yeah, Makara pretty much means Capricorn, the zodiac sign Capricorn. So when the sun, I think Makara Sankranti, yeah, when it's a Hindu festival and it is dedicated to the Lord Sun, because he enters Capricorn.
Mm-hmm.
So every year he enters Capricorn, and that's the Sankranti happening. So
what do the people do on that day, or is it one day?
Dedicated. So there are so many festivals on the same day. Yeah, on the same day. And the whole of India celebrates Makar Sankranti in different ways. So in south of India, we celebrate Pongal. So in north of India and central India, we celebrate, the same day in different forms. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Punjab, the northwest, we celebrate as Lodi festival. In Kashmir, we celebrate as Sishur Sankran. In Himachal, we celebrate as Magha Saji. In Gujarat, we celebrate as Uttarayan. You know, it's the same thing. In Kerala, yeah, we have Makar Vilakku, in Tamil Nadu, it's Thai Pongal. So same thing, different ways we celebrate. So it's pretty much the whole kind of significance is on this auspicious day, sun enters the zodiac sign of Capricorn or Makara, which marks the end of the winter months.
Okay.
And the beginning of longer days comes in the picture. Okay. So, and this is the beginning of the month of Magha as well. That's Magha Snan to happen.
Yeah.
We talked about the Magha Snan before. So, the logic is to recompense for the distinction that happens due to a revolution around this. Every 80 years, the day of Sankranti is referred by one day. So there's a lot of cosmological, astronomical kind of reasons for this. And the sun begins its northward journey. That's why we call it Uttarayana. Uttaram is northward. Uttarayana. Okay.
So that's, of course, the different hemisphere to New Zealand. So it's
regional, but we bring that region. We bring our country and region wherever we go. Everybody does, right? Even somebody goes to space, that guy remembers Earth, you know.
And can you say a few words about Thai Pusam?
Yeah,
Thai Pusam. Also something to do with the loon, the moon?
Thai Pusam is basically in the month of Thai. Thai is a South Indian way of celebrating the month. So it goes to our gods and goddesses, where we have a very powerful deity. His name is Skanda or Kartikeya or Murugan. Very popular in South and everywhere, actually. And the festival basically commemorates the occasion where his mother, Parvati, the goddess Shakti, she gave him a spear to vanquish the evil, demon Surapadman of his sons and his brothers. So that's what we, that is what happens on Thai Pusam. So you'll find there's a lot of pomp and celebration because the demon is vanquished by Lord Kartikeya. So that's what it
is. So now we've talked about three main celebrations, and is there food involved in every celebration?
Of course, food is involved everywhere.
So tell us a little bit about the Hindu food.
You see, there's no such thing called as fasting during festivals for us. We feast.
Do you have any fasting?
Oh, we do have fasting during the... But there are so many fastings that happen, actually, with every deity. Any deity which is dear to you, for example, in your Catholic traditions, you have different saints, right? But some people have an affinity to a certain saint,
yes,
more than the others. So what we call that's my personal saint, for example. In the same way, there are so many deities and gods and the powers, and we have an affinity to one power, based on our mental makeup.
Yeah.
If somebody is very emotional, they would have affinity to somebody who is very soft, nice. Somebody is very ferocious and very aggressive. They will have people with the weapons in hand,
yeah.
Gods with the weapons in hand. So that way, even food has got a very important part in all of our festivals. So based on, like you mentioned about the Makara Sankranti festival is celebrated in different ways. The food that is associated with those different festivals is also, the same festival in different parts of India is also different. So in the Pongal one, we have the rice made with jaggery. And also rice made with jaggery is like a molasses, sugar cane, sweet.
Very sweet.
Yeah, very nice it is. And we call it, you know, chakkar pongal, meaning the sweet pongal, sweet rice with lots of, not spices, but lots of like cashews and raisins and things like that, nuts and all that. So, and so that is because rice is very is available readily in south of India. In north of India, they won't be having rice. They will be having wheat varieties, for example. So it all depends. So food as such in our tradition, the Indian tradition or the Hindu tradition, we always consider that to be, the purpose of the food is very important. It is basically to provide the increase the duration of life, purify the mind as well, because we think that the food that we eat, it links to the mind. So imagine eating a hot chili and going to sleep. I don't know if you'll have a peaceful sleep. And of course, it will also aid bodily strength as well.
But there are a lot of sayings about you eat what you are or something like that.
Yes, like for example, there's a very famous popular adage in India, in Hindi, which is, you know, jaisa ann, meaning as your food, vaisa man, that way is your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you eat crap, your mind will be crap. So if you eat holy foods, not holy in the sense, pure food. You know, today we say the science is saying the same thing. If you're eating more raw and organic stuff, your life will be enhanced. It's as simple as that. You will have a better metabolism, have a better sleep.
So what is considered the most... the healthiest food. Is there anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe no meat or...
Absolutely. It is actually quite a science that we have. It is part of the Ayurveda, the health science that we have that's been there for thousands of years. So food is extremely, extremely important. Actually, food is considered as like a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Not medicine, but food itself becomes medicine.
Of course, if you eat the right thing.
Exactly. So we have three types of food in a Hindu kind of lifestyle. One we call as the sattvic food. Sattvic food is basically fresh and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rajasic food is very kind of stimulating food.
Can you give us an example? What is stimulating?
Definitely. And the third one is the tamasic food. Tamasic food is one of the preserved kind of stale food.
Yeah.
And people generally eat food based on their own temperament. So if they have a sattvic mind, they will eat sattvic food. If they have a rajasic mind, stimulating mind, they will eat stimulating foods. If you're dull and, you know, slumber oriented, you will eat such food which is stale generally. Like old food and it doesn't matter. You don't even bother cooking straight away and eating. They won't be eating that. So sattvic food are, they're like the farm fresh food, vegetables, whole grains, fresh milk and things like that. So, and the rajasic food is like, which really promote aggressiveness and promotion, promote their competitiveness in us, kind of thing. They are the like, you'll not be very happy listening to this, but coffee, tea, it stimulates, right? It really gives you that high energy. You know, we drink in the supermarket, high sugar items, pepper, for example, coming to food, green chilies, wines and things like that are very kind of
stimulating
rajasic food, So people who are athletes who need to be alert quite a bit, they eat those kind of foods. And the tamasic foods are the fermented ones, leftovers, not to speak of what we take for lunch, which is probably dinners, last night's dinner. prepared meat of animals long dead, for example, cold food, deep refrigerated food, deep fried food, they're all tamasic food, which actually doesn't promote a stimulating, energetic, life-giving properties. So that's what And even in the Bhagavad Gita, in our holy Gita, Krishna in the 17th chapter actually says that. He says the sattvic food is one which is cooked and eaten within 3 hours of being cooked.
Oh my God. So when do you work? You have to work in the kitchen.
So 2 minute noodles is not, I cook noodles and eat. No. That is actually preserved food for you.
That's why there are so many Indian restaurants.
Yeah.
Because people have to prepare it and eat it quickly.
Oh, totally.
So the best way is to have a restaurant.
Yeah. So that's what food is all about, And Ayurveda clearly says, so if you go to an Ayurvedic doctor in Auckland or anywhere in the world, they will do their diagnosis and they will say that based on your temperament of your body, you need to eat certain foods. If you do not eat certain foods, you will have this imbalance in your body, in your different, humors of your body, your doshas of your body. So, and they give you food to balance your
temperament.
Temperament and of your body as well.
Yeah.
So it's very important. That's why even in homeopathy, for example, they will not just diagnose your body. They will ask you what is going on in your mind. So because in Hindu and the Eastern traditions particularly, the body and mind is considered as one element, one part. Mind is not separate from the body. They're all connected. So when we are angry, our body is, you can see that in the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
is there any food that is completely forbidden as a Hindu?
It all depends on the temperament, right? So we can't say.
Okay, so there's no, it, not like, because last year I interviewed a Jewish lady and she talked about kosher food. So there's nothing like that in the Hindu tradition.
So we say that your food is purpose-driven in the sense that, for example, even if you talk from a common sense point of view, if you're an athlete, your food will be different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a meditator, the food will have to be different. If you're a swimmer, the food has to be different. If you're a rugby player, food has to be different. So it all depends on what you evaluate to be the purpose of your life. So if you're going for if you have a spiritual yearning, and if you're searching for enlightenment, and meditation is the path, knowledge, reflection is the path, contemplation is the path. So you will have foods that aid thinking, critical thinking, reflection. What are some of the foods that really aid critical thinking and reflection and meditation and contemplation? They are vegetarian food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Non-alcoholic food, non-fermented food, fresh food. So a religious life, a spiritual life requires you to have the sattvic, lifestyle, which simply means, what is... life enhancing.
Would you have tea in the Hindu tradition?
Of course. Food. The restrictions of food is based on the temperament of the person. So if you go to all the temples in India, you will never find meat. Never ever find eggs. All the temple food is vegetarian food. Even in the Gurudwaras, actually, in the Sikh tradition, is also that way. Another reason is India is a land of plenty. There's so much agricultural produce that happens. There's hardly any reason to eat meat that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying that every Hindu is a vegetarian, but it's highly prescribed. Even people who eat meat, they eat only once or twice a week. Like I grew up in a society in Mumbai where even my friends who are meat eaters, they don't eat meat every day. They eat once or twice a week, maybe a Saturday thing, maybe a Sunday thing.
But I think that has been the tradition in many, many cultures, and that was not for religious purposes, but because there wasn't enough meat available, so you'd have the meat for the special days in the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it also depends on the regional availability of food.
Yeah. What about food for thought?
Food for thought, food for thinking, sattvic food, no doubt about that. juice, fresh fruit, less spicy food,
Less spicy, that's quite important when you are from India.
Yeah, and also food that creates less sluggishness in your body. You know, if you eat a lot of potatoes, you automatically go to sleep. eat potatoes and rice, you will go to sleep. you will not be available for thinking.
Because of that carbs.
Yeah, exactly. So it is all, yeah. So there are prescriptions of food for people in the spiritual journey. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. For example, monks in the Hindu traditions, they generally don't eat pungent food or astringent food like garlic ginger or onion, for example, because they create a certain kind of juices in your body which kind of creates these passion inducing tendencies. So it is prescribed. So if you ask me, are there prescriptions for food? Yeah, of course there are. But there are not, they are not like black and white. In the sense, you must do this or else it's not like that. People who are meditative generally choose to live a very calm, composed lifestyle. Even the fridge will be looking different. The food in the fridge will be looking different to somebody who is not that way, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, that explains it, sir, because it's about your mind and your food going together.
Totally. Body-mind complex is one complex. And the food is basically going to the body, but it also impacts the mind. No doubt about that. And today, modern research has proved it many times.
I've seen when I visited Hindu temples that people brought food into the temple. Is that for the gods or for the priests?
No, never for the priests. The temple is always about the deity.
Okay. So it would not be given to anybody? What happens with the food?
Oh, for example, if I get a sweet to the local Krishna temple, okay, and I offer Krishna sweets, the temple doesn't keep it. They have a ritual where they show it like as an offering to Lord Krishna, and they give it back to me.
Okay.
Yeah, so sometimes what they do is because in a temple you're supposed to be large hearted and all that. People say whatever I offer to Lord Krishna or to Shakti goddess or Lord Shiva, I leave it for the people who come to the temple. Let them also partake that. Mm-hmm. So that's how it is. But some temples or many temples actually in India particularly, they also have kitchens associated with the temples, and there are specific food which are quite famous. So if you go to a certain temple, you'll get this kind of food, and very people look forward to that, actually.
Thank you very much, Ram. I think that gives us food for thought.
And thought for food.
Okay, and let's see what's coming up at Titi Paunamo, as we are having only sessions online, which is hopefully it's not like conserved food. It's online and it's healthy because we are not contagious. And so our next sessions with Titi Paunamo Study and Joy are going to be on the 14th, 21st and 28th of February on three Mondays, 7 to 8:30 PM. And it will be with Brother Kieran Finn, and he will introduce us to the Holy Spirit, a driving force. All our sessions are held on Zoom, so we don't depend on any alert levels or traffic light systems. So for any information or registration, please see my website at www.studyjoy.nz or send an email to info@studyjoy.nz. Thank you so much, Ram, for this interview on food and the Hindu celebrations. And I wish you all the best, and kia kaha, and keep safe.
Thank you so much.
Out there, our peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawning and shining. Hear the cry. Can you hear the call for this light to reveal?